Channel 1 right and beginning of the visit with Wade, with Rick, this Sunday afternoon, 8th of October, 72. Channel 1 right and beginning of the visit with Wade, with Rick, this Sunday afternoon, 8th of October, 72. Channel 1 right and beginning of the visit with Wade, with Rick, this Sunday afternoon, 8th of October, 72. Channel 1 over and beginning of the visit with Wade, with Rick, this Sunday afternoon, 8th of October, 72.
Pull up a chair, right where you are. You don't eat over there, Faye. What do you got it all over there for?
Oh.
Put one over here.
Just pull yours up there, then.
All yours. Sit in the middle there, where you enjoy yourself. Rick can sit over here. Hey, are you waiting for me to lead off?
You got your business?
There's towels all in there. There's a whole, whole shebang. A whole stack of them, 6 foot high. Wade, in that first meeting in particular, it seemed like they just was ready to, they had the fist all ready to, seem like old, George Wilson, of course, and why was he walking around? Why, I've forgotten that. Asking if he's in order.
Yeah.
I've forgotten that.
He had a thing going about this condemning of buildings. And so he walked around and determined on his own part that there was no fire escape for that building. That was accessible. That's what he was doing, wandering around all in the back, messing around, and go out and mumble. Then he was trying to get everybody, get the attention of the council, and he never was really in order to bring up his point.
Oh, the building we were sitting in?
Mm-hmm, upstairs. Just pure causing trouble, best he knew how. That's his business in life. I told you the comment I heard him overheard him make on the bench. This girl was sitting on the bench, right in front of my place, and I walked out the door, and she was talking to him. And I heard her say, he was saying, I knew what he was talking about because I'd left. And he's talking about, well, he could have built a house out there, and he had land, he could have put his trailer out there. And then she says, well, why didn't you do that, George? He said, to fight McAnopy.
Well, he writes that in the heart of the thing, isn't he?
That's his whole purpose. He'll probably spend every dime and ounce of energy he's got in that fight in McAnopy until he makes his point. And it, I don't know when his point would be made.
And you put up that shed out of old scavenger stuff.
I don't think he has a permit to do it.
Well, you know he doesn't have a permit. It'd be beneath him, wouldn't it?
I think so. So I mean, it'd be just one more thing that he could get riled about. And get. Oh, he's... That's such a fault in the character. It's been a long time since I read that book, the barn burning thing, the Faulkner story about the sharecropper. They'd just stay mad at everybody, and when he'd leave, he'd burn their barns and take off. It's that mentality that everybody's against you no matter what you're doing. It doesn't make a damn what you're doing. You know, the world's doing you in.
Well, he's so good humored about it. That fellow in Faulkner seemed like he was...
He's more of a Heron type, wasn't he?
Yeah. Hey,
scowl on.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Heron has always got that scowl on George to get a grin on his face.
Mm-hmm.
Sly. But Heron, I've yet seen him perk up to any degree. Or the mayor.
Well, with George, it's a sport.
In his own way.
It's his way of life. It's his.
Mm-hmm. He's one of those characters. I don't know whether he really does it, but there's a character type that they used to go into a bar and they'll start a fight. I don't give a damn who it is or what. It's just the idea of fighting, and the rougher it is, the more fun it is, and they'll laugh all the way through it and get their teeth busted in, arm broken. And say, man, wasn't that fun?
The just go home and tell the children about it.
Yes. Yeah. And it wasn't long ago that Micanopy was predominantly that way. Back in the 30s. That's why they had their fun. Now, Hank continued pretty heavy up into the 50s, as far as I can tell. There's a really good story about Buddy Miller owns that big building in town with the columns, a big mansion.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was when he was a kid, and one of the Herlongs, or some one of the guys, Herlong or some name like that, because Buddy's connected with him. That's reason. I mean, he's a relative. That's reason he got the house through inheritance or something.
Uh-huh.
And this one is Sand Road between Micanopy and Ocala. And they all drove down in the Herlong's Cadillac. They were kids, about 20 or something like that. And started drinking at the bars and having a good time. Then they tried to get this guy, Herlong, to go home. He said, he didn't want to. So they figured they'd do him a favor and take his car, since he's getting so drunk. So he got in his car and started driving back, and he found out about it right away, and he got him a taxi. He started in hot pursuit. He also had a pistol. So they got up behind him, they started shooting at his own car with his pistol, with his two buddies, best friends, in the car, and he's shooting at that car. And they had guns, so they turned around and started shooting at the taxi. And the driver says, "Man, I'm quitting." And he says, "No, you don't. You keep driving, I'll shoot you." So they're doing this for about 2 or 3 miles, shooting at each other. And finally, they got the radiator on the taxi, and he boiled over and stopped. And the Herlong guy knew that it wasn't the taxi driver's fault. But anyhow, the cab driver got out and took off running through the woods. And they got on back to Micanopy. I reckon he walked or something. And the next day, he got up, they sort of met downtown somewhere, and he slapped Buddy on the back and said, "Man, wasn't that a good show last night? That really was fun." And the bullets are flying. And it was fun to him. Yeah, thoroughly enjoyed it.
You've been talking to somebody. You know Buddy Miller?
I haven't heard.
He lives in Miami or something. He comes up and visits once in a while.
Oh.
Oh, he's an air control guy or something. He doesn't have any money. He's not particularly brilliant, but he's just telling a couple of old Micanopy stories about when he was a kid.
Where was that? Down the bar?
No, sitting on the bench out in front of my place. And just up drinking beer.
Well, that's before Mr. Weaver closed.
I think, we was open then. That was, I think, last year. So.
You won't hear any more stories now.
Yeah, that's Weaver's clothes is vacated. It's like somebody pulled a bathroom plug on the tub.
Yeah.
And the water hall goes out. And it closed down. That's what happened.
Yeah. Selma's clothes, Selma's clothes, and Weaver's clothes. That sheriff deputy they brought up from Tampa, you see, I saw him on his last legs,
mm-hmm.
And he was one of Buster's buddies. And I remember when he died, Buster was shaken. He says, pretty soon, you see, we'll be the only ones left.
I'm trying to catch that man's name, man. It's always Duncan.
Roy Duncan.
Roy Duncan. Yeah, he and Buster are really on a level with their sex business.
Yeah.
They're on a par.
Yeah.
Buster just thoroughly enjoyed his antics in the sex game.
Yeah.
Boy, you talk about a dirty old man. Duncan was it. He really was.
Seemed like he had a little young wife.
But she's remarried now.
When he was on his last legs.
Mm. Hell, I think she's in her 60s now.
Well, is she that far along?
Well, she looks it, anyhow.
Well,
she could be a lot younger.
I don't really recollect. See, at that time, I wasn't paying attention to any of them. Mm-hmm. And I saw him coming around, and I saw shuddered and left, you see.
Oh, he's vile, that man was.
Well, that wasn't it. I just couldn't look. You see, it was me. Well, he wouldn't hurt me. And he was talking to Buster. As all public talk, you see.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't care who hurt him.
That was really interesting that when I was listening to Buster and Jack Sanders talk about Ted Duncan and his final act as a sheriff. And Buster was just relating the story and getting a lot of sort of vicarious joy out of it. And Jack said, I mean, he would talk about it differently because he couldn't associate with the man because it's not a stated moral situation with Jack. It's one that's just underneath. He's got a kind of moral that doesn't allow him to associate with this Duncan guy at all.
And Buster was.
Buster loved it.
And you were there.
Yeah, sitting between the two of them while they're telling the story, and it's just really two worlds involved with these people. Strange thing.
And that was one of Duncan's escapades.
And that's when he went down and shot the man at the Franklin Mill. For the good reason the man had been complaining about Duncan's dog tearing the clothes off of his own line. And Duncan was going to show him who was boss. His dog could do his bloody well please and went down and shot the man.
Buster told about it?
Mm-hmm. I'd heard he pistol whipped the guy, the white man. But he actually shot him. And I think he died later on. He didn't die right then. And he came from this is when Weavers was across the street in that log cabin. And Buster was over there, and Roy came by and said there was court held that morning. And somehow or other, he'd gotten it worked around, so this man was subpoenaed to go to court. I don't know how that worked, because it was Duncan's dog that was tearing. Oh, I know, he made threats. That was it. He was getting uppity. He was going to beat hell out of Duncan if he didn't keep his dog at home. Because he was asking two or three times, and Duncan wouldn't do it. Then he, like George Wilson would, by God, I'll beat hell out of you if you don't keep your dog at home. So
Duncan, he was peppery, too.
Yeah, so Duncan then swore out a warrant on him for threatening. Got him to the court. And didn't show up. So since he was sheriff, he had to go pick him up. I walked by and told Buster. Says, well, I'm going to go down and pick up so-and-so. And if you happen to hear any sirens coming, you know it ain't going to be me thereafter. And Buster says, sure as hell. About 20 minutes later, you hear the sirens coming. And the guy come out of the shop or whatever, and he said he either leaned over to pick up a bottle or to put down a bottle. Nobody knows which one. And Duncan shot him right there when he leaned over.
Well, Duncan.
So the town retired him. Spanked his hands bad.
Oh, that's when they retired.
That wasn't his first involvement.
With whites?
Well, with the people there. I mean, he just didn't start doing that. And Willie Wade. The black.
Well, he'd already killed about seven blacks, and beat. There's still blacks there, according to Willie, that don't think straight. He said at all, because their skulls are bashed in. And it really did them in bad.
Buster could tell a good bit if he would, couldn't he?
Mm-hmm.
But he won't.
He will sometimes. It's just a mood. If you can get him off of his dirty jokes, and. If you ever get him off of that, he can come out with some good stuff. But he just stays in those dirty jokes so long.
I stopped by there yesterday. Or was it Friday? Friday. I hadn't seen him in a long time. So I thought I'd better check in. I didn't see him then. I just stopped. The door was closed. The garage, big old garage door was closed. I walked up and there he was. He had his head under the hood of a car. And he kind of looked up and didn't say much, as if he was busy. And about that time, I'd seen it before, but I, a lot of times you look at something and it don't quite register. And all at once it hit me. I could see it. I was looking at that little pickup truck of his with a two-decker scaffold on it. That makes it three-decker, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And it was put up just as simple, just as easy as you could put it up without any welding or any heavy stuff. And I looked at one thing there, and I said, this thing here. And he looked over there to see what it was, and he says, that's an exhaust clamp. But just as soon as he looked around and said, exhaust clamp, I had him. So I got a hold of him. He said, it's not hard to get a hold of us too much.
You should have been in on the construction on that. He brought his pipes out, you know, and there were about four people standing around drinking beer. And so they said, well, this, you know, we could weld this. Let's turn it this way. And then this guy would say, no, well, let's put it this way. And it's all backwards and forwards. And the surprising thing is that a few shortly later, that rig showed up. And it's sort of stout. And it's done from that angle of, like, what can we do the most with the least?
Yes.
That's the attitude.
Yes, that's the attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And when I thought of that, I said to him, this thing would do, why didn't I think of that? Anybody could use that. And he stood there and says, do you see that down this street? I said, you don't mean your premises, yes. He says, my house. Well, I says, you're not going to paint them bricks. He says, for Christ's sake, no. Look at that wood. And it just flaked, you know, just flaked. And I thought that old Buster was over there with that old wood just flaked. And that hand-me-down three-decker scaffold. And right across the street there, in a great big two-story house, painted, swimming pool in the back, and horse stables back there.
That's the kingdom.
That's the kingdom. Right across. And no communication?
Mm-mm.
No?
Oh, no. You know, that's where all the flies are bred. Wouldn't be a fly in town if it wasn't for the Hedlund's horses. The Hedlund's also shoot Buster's dogs, according to him. He finally lost Cookie, and he wound up dead.
Well, I hadn't seen the dog.
Yeah, Cookie, that's a shame. Cookie was getting a little bit cantankerous. He's a dog about so big, a mongrel mutt, and every morning go out there and Buster would come straggling in about 10 o'clock. And if you're out there, you see him, you always got one or two cars parked that are just there,
mm-hmm.
Junkers or something. He's up here, Cookie. And pat the hood, and Cookie bounces up there and then says, all right, now, what are we going to do today? And so he starts talking to the dog, planning his day out. To Cookie. It was a ritual he'd go through with Cookie.
Oh.
He would plan his day. He'd go by there and say, oh, we're just talking about what we're going to do for the day. He had Cookie trained about counting and barking.
Yeah, he'd count.
And stuff like that.
Mr. Weaver told me where he learned that. He got it from his dad. His dad liked pets. And this time, somebody drove up there and he needed some work done on the car. Mr. Weaver remembered what it was. He lived in Miami and he didn't have any money. And Mr. Beaver said, well, just give me what you got, and I'll take this dog in on it. And it was a trained dog. The dog could count. And that was way back, you see, when Buster was a child. Mr. Beaver remembered that.
Mr. Old Man Mountain took the dog.
Old Man Mountain, yes. Old Man Mountain. Now, Old Man Mountain, the only picture I ever had of him was, I never had a picture. I saw him in the hospital when he was just about dead, you see. And I was in the next bed. That's when I got acquainted with him, the whole family. They'd come up there to visit him. So I never saw him in his prime. I never heard him talk about him. But he apparently, other things I hear about him, he got around. He circulated. And you see, Buster's mother ran the Methodist Church. She had charge of the music, you see, and performed herself.
He must have been some sort of a generous soul, convivial or something like that, just from knowing Buster. And yesterday, I believe the story came out, sitting out there and talking with a couple of people, and they're talking about hunting and how that's really gone down the drain. And Buster was saying, like, he used to hunt, and his old man, he knew where the squirrels were, where anything you wanted to shoot. So he knew the places where they stayed. He said he'd always open his mouth. He wouldn't keep them secret. And I kept telling him. He said some so-and-so came by one day and yawned and stretched and they're a little drunk. He said, you know, hunting's sure getting bad. I don't know where I could find some squirrels. And Buster says his dad just pops right up and says, well, I know where there's squirrels. They're down so-and-so and such a place. And the fellow says, well, I reckon one of these days I just might go down there and check that out and see if there are any squirrels there if I feel up to hunting. And he left, and Buster says to the old man, he said, man, you shouldn't ever tell where your squirrels are. He said, they'll go down there and clean them out. And so Buster said that he and the old man decided to go hunting the next morning. So sure enough, they go down to that spot, and they drive up, and he said, and there's their Model A parked right in the middle of the squirrels. They didn't have to think twice to get down there and get those squirrels. Ever get around to it, they said. They decided to go hunting. About 12 hours later, they were right there, killing squirrels.
Now, old Dufunny from the tavern over there, who wanted the beer license on Sunday, that was at the first meeting.
Yeah.
That was Mitchell.
Mitchell.
He never been back.
No, he hasn't.
Yeah. Yeah, he was trying to get me to sell him a square foot of land so he could qualify to run for council.
Really?
They still have that, you got to be a freeholder to be a councilman, see? They've still got that going.
Don't tell me.
And you can't, you know, change that in most instances now in larger cities and everything. But you still have to be a freeholder in Macanopy. Oddly enough, about 60 or 80% of the colored people own their own places. A tremendous proportion. They don't rent, they own them.
Is Macanopy, man?
Mm-hmm.
Willie Wade rents places, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's only that one place I know of. He owns that outright, and he owns his store, too.
And Willie Wade doesn't run for council?
No.
Well, Willie Wade got a store?
Yeah. It's, go down by the graveyard on that paved road.
Yeah.
You go right to the end of the paved road. And it almost dead ends, it does dead end into his store.
Yeah.
It's sort of to the right a little bit.
Yeah.
You hardly know it was a store except for a couple of signs up there, like maybe Pepsi Cola nailed to a tree or something like that. I think he does a pretty good business. Last time I was down there, several little white kids just sitting around there charging things and eating them, you know, junk and stuff like that. He may own Micanopy next year, you know. He probably understudied Thrasher.
Sure,
go ahead, Georgia.
Well, that's it. See, if they would take over Mr. Weaver's store, you wouldn't have any access there because they'd draw so many of their own.
Yeah.
The color, you know, they'd flood it. I see white people don't flood things like that.
Oh yeah, that wouldn't work at all. Because the white people wouldn't come there anymore, and it just turned totally black.
Yeah.
So the Weavers were pretty hard on the black people. They had that good old solid attitude about blacks as blacks, and there were just privileged few that would hang around. They'd let it be known that they're not to socialize in there. They'd run them out. It's all right if they bought. Buster was talking about, good Lord, what was the name that owned the Shimwell's house? The
Chronicles.
No, before them.
Oh.
May.
Yeah, but it was May.
May.
The guy, the woman had all the money, and he
yeah.
ran that packing house that was the Weaver store. It is since then.
Yeah, and that's May's.
Didn't I tell you where he'd get the spades to work for him? They'd actually come in, they'd start dumping cucumbers out of a truck, and he'd get half pints of whiskey and shove them in the middle of the pile, let them dump some more, and keep shoving his half pints in there. And then he'd pay these colored guys just a pittance, and they'd load like hell get to the half pints of whiskey. Isn't that good?
You never hear of the upper crust of McNulty.
Mm-mm. Hell, there wasn't one.
I always think, now, here's...
He would be an upper crust, but what can you call him, that Mays character? He was, his wife bailed him out of jail in Georgia 3 or 4 times, bought him out. And he was the Big Daddy Diamond Jim type, evidently, with the great big diamond ring, you know, and cigar.
Me?
The man that lived in the house the Hammakers bought.
Sure. Well, now.
Evidently, he didn't like his wife smoking. And Buster started off talking about, says, you know, people just don't walk anymore. They'll get in the car to drive from here to the post office. He says, well, I remember. And he started in about his old lady, Ms. Mays, whatever her name is. He called by first name.
Ms. May.
May. And he said, well, she'd get in that car and back it out. And she'd drive down to the post office. Who was she running to? Not Thelma, somebody else. She'd pick her up and go to the post office. And then instead of coming straight back, they said, as long as they're out in the car, they had to go somewhere. So they'd drive out through Color Town back and around. He says, but you know really what that was about was that Mr. May didn't like her smoking. So she'd get in the car, and as soon as she's back in the car out, she'd light up a cigarette, and you'd see her come by here, you know, which is only about 12 feet further. She'd be smoking like a storm. And then she'd drive around smoking another cigarette after she got out of the post office. And he said, you know, I don't know why people want to sneak around and do things like that. And he said, I told him, and Ms. Weaver was telling me about it, Mary, and she says, why, if I wanted to smoke like that, I'd go right on in and smoke. I wouldn't let somebody run me around like that. And Buster says, Mary, says, you know, just about 2 or 3 times a week, you invite me to the back of the store for snort, and you keep it in the washing machine, and you say, look out for Buck while I pour the whiskey. He says, yeah, you're right.
Now, Ms. May, one of the old Missionary people told me about this. Ms. May had that restaurant over there, where the log cabin is, or over
mm-hmm.
there. And it was one of the show places, and people came from everywhere to eat her food.
Hmm.
I can't tell you about it.
Well, I bet I'd get Buster to crank up on that one day.
He could do it. Now, I'll tell you who told me. You know, old man May had this fella, Denham. What? That's not his name.
Denton. That's a name around.
What's his first name?
I don't know. The one I know is a Bobby Denton now, but that's an old
Nokia
name.
Denton run the store for him. He started it early in the morning and stayed late at night. And his daughter married Mrs. Patterson's boy over there one time. The only time I ever talked to her. That is, where, you know, just actually you might say talk. She told me about his mate.
Mm-hmm.
She brought up, you see. She was a child, and his mate was middle age, say. But she remembered all that, too. I wish I could kind of tell you about it. And, McIntosh had the good families, but I guess there wasn't much like that in Mickey.
Well, it was a
Herlong had that house down there, you see.
I don't reckon there's enough of them guys to be considered a class. They were just still individuals.
Yes, I don't know.
In other words, it'd take maybe four or five of them to be a class. They didn't have that many.
And you see, Thrasher, you know, he never minded anything. You can tell by looking at him. He never minded anything. He got a sort of a mercantile view of the world. Now.
Yeah. Well, the business heads down there are very strange. You know, all the money running around like the Weavers' attitude. I think I mentioned that last time. But, well, first of all, Wesley says, I'll let that goddamn stuff stay in there and rot before I sell it out for less than wholesale.
Yeah.
And he was hopping.
Yeah.
And so finally, they couldn't get anybody to buy it out at their rate, so they decided they'd sell it, and they go in a 20% discount. And that lady stayed there. I told you that. Like, she was up there in the last week. Then they go in a 50%. And people did exactly what I said. Me too. I didn't really buy anything this time because it was really junk left. But people come in there, and I was laughing at Buster. He came out with a big sack, and he says, you better go on in there. It's really good stuff. And I went in, wandered around a while, and came back out and says, Buster, says, I did that up there at Myers. I went in and bought all kinds of junk that I could never use in this world. He says, you know, I did the same thing. You get it for 50%, do that for life.
So
they about sold out.
So they finally did that. Took them a while.
Mm-hmm. But see, Thrasher has that same mentality of he's squeezing that nickel.
Oh, yes.
But if he had any sense, he could make a bloody fortune out of that store.
Yes.
He's got stuff right there that if he sold it, he could sell it for four times the price.
Yes.
And promote it. He could make enough on the stock in his store to retire.
Yes.
Right now.
Well, he don't want to retire.
Mm-mm.
Well, let's keep it
and
going.
He, by God, is not going to sell any land. The group on the Simonton Ranch wants to buy all these little scattered little pieces of land around to try to make it squared off a little bit more. You know, like there's pieces in the middle of it and some on the edges and make it ragged. And Thrasher happens to own one of these, or two or three of them. And the boy that works up there, real estate salesman, he said he went down and talked to Thrasher. I don't say I ain't talked to anybody. I went over with him to the Townsends. And good Lord, he can't converse with those people. He just blunders in like a bear.
Yeah.
And he doesn't let them go anywhere. And I don't see how in the world he even dared talk to Thrasher. But Thrasher says, no. Because I've already written that in my will, that property is going to those children. I don't care what they do with it, but I'm not selling it. That's it.
That's it.
Not selling it.
Wait, all those colored people who came to that first meeting that I went to up in the school auditorium never came back.
No, the last meeting I was in, I had about five or six there, which is about the same proportion.
Now, you had a whole contingent of them at that first meeting.
I'd say 20 or better.
Sure.
I don't know. They had a lot of fire stirring.
Yeah.
And of course, it was their new council, their own councilman in there, and they wanted they felt more invited with Eddie up there.
Yeah.
Watch him operate.
Okay.
And I think that they were concerned about that road issue too.
Oh.
Because they wanted something done about their place.
They wanted.
So I think the road issue brought them out a little bit.
Oh, I see.
See, none of these people are going to really sustain a monthly interest in the council unless you've got some harassment going on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Those that showed up, a good proportion of them won't keep coming.
Yeah.
You can't keep it lively enough for them. You can't keep the entertainment up year-round.
Yeah.
We'll have to back off and schedule entertainment on every third month.
Yeah.
Some burning issue that everybody's mad about.
Have a six-shooter.
Willie Wade.
Were you there when they tried to get a moratorium on the building?
No.
Maybe that was later on. Troy made a motion that they declare a moratorium on the building.
Uh-huh.
And of course, Heron was dead set against it. And they couldn't get. Eddie Glover evidently was asleep. Got the council all tied up, and Eddie goes to sleep.
Well, that's the first time
Eddie did that last meeting. When Troy asked for a second to the motion on approving the minutes, Eddie.
You know how Eddie sits there with his leg tucked under,
mm-hmm.
his other leg out, his arm by side, he never moves.
Works so much, he's got to sleep whenever he sits down. I'll bet. He drives that truck, I don't know how many hours a week, and he's out doing plumbing and contracting on the side and stuff, and he's always out doing something.
On his own?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. He's a worker. He put in a sewer connection for me, and they did it right cheap.
Well, I didn't know anyone worked on his own anymore.
Oh, a lot of those guys do. Sure. You can get bricklaying done, carpenter work done from all these people. Good bricklayers over there. And Eddie does a really, he's really classic, you know. He'll just walk at a given pace, look at a given pace, studies it out. He does beautiful nigger rig job on everything. Simplest, cheapest, easiest way. And doesn't charge any huge labor fee. He had a helper with him this time. And I wish I hadn't been so tight that I didn't spend more time talking to him, because they got back into how they got to Micanopy. And back when it was really a mill town. And this other guy said he got here to Micanopy, and he said the only way to get back out was to walk. He didn't have enough money to buy a ticket out. And it was... So he had to stay. He never could get ahead to get enough money to buy himself out of Micanopy. And he's still there, and that's like 40 years ago or something. And it wasn't, I mean, it's like by virtue of no choice, he didn't choose to be there or anything else. He said the only way out was to walk. So he just stayed.
You know, I've heard a number of them say how they got there. I've heard Mr. Peace say how he got down there. And, of course, Mr. Weaver and a number of them, how they got there. It's curious.
That, you know, that getting somewhere back in the early part of the century, I suppose before then, too, is so much different from what happens now.
Yes.
People determined to be somewhere or get called by a job or... I remember that old Englishman talking about how he got in Destin, Florida, and it was just a total story, just like your recording of this gentleman in Orange Lake, how he wound up with that building in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
You know, by virtue of all kinds of weird circumstances, he had to run a sight of line through a building, winds up buying the blessed thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
This old Englishman wound up bought a boat sight unseen and didn't even have a bottom in it. And had to row 5 miles in a boat without a bottom in it and all.
Now, George didn't just decide to settle in Micanopy.
It was I-75. He came down. See, Micanopy was their center for several miles of I-75 building.
Yeah.
So they were there a couple of years.
He
just stayed.
I didn't realize they roosted there.
Yeah, that's what my building was. It was a rooming house for the I-75 building. And Jesse May Burchett is now. Dykes was I don't know whether she's married or not, but she was Jesse May Dykes. And she ran the rooming house. And there are some righteous tales about it. She evidently was a whale of character. She's a good-looking, strong woman right now. She's not anywhere out of her prime. But she ran that rooming house, and there's some wild stories about everything that went on up in that building.
Well, you're not talking about I-75.
Yes, I-75.
And she ran a rooming house?
Mm-hmm.
Where you are?
Yeah, it had two apartments in back, had the four rooms that we have across the front, and I think six more rooms at least. If not six, it was four more rooms. They were rental rooms, so they had eight rental rooms and two apartments. Now, you know, they all had a little lavatory in the corner, and we've got four bathrooms that work right now.
That work?
Yeah, and one that I could work if I wanted to, and I tore out two, I think. And when you need to go to the bathroom, sometimes it's puzzling. Too much choice and have to let you in. But the whole place was ringed around by these little rooms, and then the whole middle section was nothing, just barren, just empty. They just built 12 foot rooms all the way around the periphery of the building and rented them out.
Yeah. Well,
and she ran it.
Now, who is that?
Jessie Mae Dykes. Or Jessie Mae Burch, if she's gotten married. She's living with Charlie Burch's old man, Horace Burch, that used to run the garage that the Weaver kid bought and closed up now. And he divorced his wife.
Hi.
She was a Dykes, and that's an old McAnopy name.
Well, that fella, Dan Dykes, is that his name? He works at the mill and lives back over there by the cemetery.
Well, that's probably her ex-husband then.
Dan Dykes, and he had a heart attack. And he used to come to school, Sunday school now and then at McAnopy when I was going.
But she never would come?
I don't know.
They got divorced or something, because she owns a house over there right next to the cemetery. And
Dan Dykes was the one who picked up Shrouse's little service station there, and his boy ran it.
Now, which service station is that?
Where Shrouse used to be, there at the corner. The only one to make an open. Right up to your right.
Mm-hmm. A white one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's right next to the bank. Old bank.
Right mm-hmm. next to the bank.
Yeah, Birch finally wound up with that and closed it up. And,
yeah.
And then that crazy...
Dykes.
Well, it's the guy that owned the trailer court. What? The one over by the cemetery. There were two of them. B&B Garage. Two of them went in together, and neither one of them had the first need at all. They were always, every time I went up there, they were speculating on how much money they were going to make, not money-making ideas.
Yeah.
And they'd sit around, they wouldn't turn wrench one.
Yeah.
They were talking about these vast, grandiose schemes. Two of them all day long.
I see.
Good Lord, what is, it's,
that was,
maybe Dykes was one of them. Is Dykes a younger guy?
Oh, no.
Well, I mean, right at 40 or something like
oh,
that?
Oh, no. He's fast, way past that. No, and he's not active. He's on the loose, on the failing side.
Mm.
Old Russ up there, he came to that first meeting.
Russell?
Russ Smith. Is that his name?
Oh, I don't know.
Up there, does the welding.
Oh, Red?
Red.
Red. Red Smith.
Red Smith. They call him Red?
Yes. Well, he's got an edge to him, doesn't he?
He did that first night, but didn't come back.
Yeah.
He stood up a time or two, and he had that sway back somehow. What is that? Seemed like when he stood up straight, he did like that. I've seen people like that.
Now he's Brigman's brother-in-law or something. There's a connection between John Brigman and him in an in-law ship.
Oh, they're the one that put the bill in there.
Yes, a $500 bill that was supposed to be $250. Buster loves that. Oh, he'll talk for 2 hours about that one thing.
He will.
Oh, he loves it. That was it. That just laid it all open to him. He knew it was there all along, and they did that bill, and he just clapped his hands. Because he said all along, that's all in the world they're doing, lining their pockets over there with city money. And he don't like Brigman worth a cuss because he's in laws with Red, and they're getting all that money off of fixing trucks, and Buster never got a dime.
Buster never got a dime.
Well, he's not doesn't have that mentality.
Buster never charged me.
Oh, he's terrible. He says, you know, I think maybe I ought to charge a little bit more, but he never will do it. Hell, some of these people come by crying and sweating off the interstate, and they've got to go somewhere, and he just drops everything and fixes it. He'll go all the way in town, pick up a part. Well, how much do you owe me? Well, how about $2? And they'd be glad to pay him $50.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing?
And a little girl came by the other day, and the tire was half flat on the bike. She said, Buster, look at there, and look at my rear tire. And he looked at it. He said, man, wait, I've got to stop doing that. It's taking up all my time pumping up those damn bicycle tires. I've seen him 100 times. I use the hand pump. And goes out and bumps up the tire.
And that big gut of his?
Yeah. Yeah, he just heard the kids come by, and he'll stop everything and get out his hand pump. Pump up the tire for him.
But Buster won't go to the council meetings.
He went to one or two.
But he doesn't do anything.
No. Uh-uh. Oh, he was just like Jack Sanders. They were both going to go down there and speak their piece. They got down there and they didn't say a word.
Oh, were they?
Want to tell them exactly what they thought of the whole situation. Jack Sanders was going to demand this, that, and the other, and he just barely mumbled three words, and that was enough for him, and he quit.
And Buster?
Other than aside, he will say something on the side all the time, but he won't address the group.
The word gets around. Just as well. He publishes it. It gets around.
Well, now Troy has taken up a right strong position with his talking. Now, I never
knew
that.
Oh, he's come a long way since he first got in there. He was counterpinning me his last meeting, and I right enjoyed it. I made two suggestions, and he went against both of them.
Yeah.
And he was right.
Yeah,
that. I thought that was just fine. I enjoyed it.
Well, look.
I mean, from his standpoint and what was going on, he was absolutely right.
Well, I never knew he could speak, you know, and he had such authority about him.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's pretty serious about that route, political route.
Is
he? Yeah. It's going to be funny to watch him and Walt operate and see where they climb to. Walt, you don't see him physically flapping his wings, but he sits there and he's flapping them.
Yeah.
He must enjoy that.
Oh, he's ready. He had that little bite on the school board, that little injection of politics and power. And see, it's always meant a lot to him since then. School board, ex school board member. Well, that's a big badge.
Troy doesn't have any background.
No. Well, Walt doesn't either. Walt doesn't have any. I was thinking about that odd thing about Micanopy. Other than maybe there's a couple of hippies there with a college degree that never do anything with it, you know, but. I don't think there's a soul in that lives inside that city limits that has a college degree almost.
Well, what happens these days, you see, they all move into Gainesville
mm-hmm.
or any town.
It's just
they don't want to
You know, when you come from the Gainesville area or are familiar with it, and you know, the road's papered with these damn degrees. And I remember one council meeting sitting down there and just thinking that there wasn't a soul in there from Micanopy. And anybody that had anything to do with Micanopy that probably had any more than high school education, most of them didn't have that.
You know, it's unusual to see that, yeah, they don't have any people like that in the churches. Nobody in the churches like who perform. Now, Walt, he performs at that little church down there.
Oh, that's his place.
Yeah.
And he runs that.
He puts his toga on. He knows the ritual.
Oh, I didn't know he'd put on the smock.
Oh, yeah.
Because he does lay preaching there, they call it.
That's right. But
do you know who else is running a church now? Woodrow. The big man with the big voice. He's a preacher. At the Methodist or something. I'll find out.
Woodrow?
Yeah.
Not Woodrow Ward.
Yeah. No. Woodard. Russell Woodard. That's
Russell.
It. Russell Woodard. You know, the big handsome guy, when he talks, it rolls out of him like modified thunder.
Yeah.
And the guy, I didn't know who he was, sitting down there talking to Buster. I think it's the same fellow we fell into the squirrel shooting story about. But I started to leave, and they were mentioning something about council and or preaching or something. And they says, "We know who else has got a church," and it's Woodard. And I just turned around and said something to the effect. I said, "Well, he ought to be good. He's got the delivery. He sure does. I mean, I think he'd probably be a good preacher because he's got a fine delivery." And the other man says, "Yeah, you know what else? I like him. He says it like it is. He tells it just like it is. He doesn't mess around. Straight from the Bible."
Well, let me tell you, I've watched several go into the sort of lay preaching, and they are good before they go into it, but they can't preserve their manner, and they're not any good once they get into the preaching. The preaching is not any good. Now, he might hold up a little while, or he might hold up, but
I reckon they pick up a mindset about it and get plugged into it.
Yes.
And they can't be free, I assume.
That's right. It's something of that sort. It takes a pretty good mentality to handle a body of knowledge as if you didn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of get tied to certain states and they can't move very well.
My father preached the same day he died, the first day I can recall him preaching. He was tied to the state.
Yeah.
He never could get out from under that thing.
Yeah.
Oh, he quit writing sermons years ago, you know.
Yeah.
Just get up and just punch a button and just go
right
up that river.
Yeah.
All you got to give them is three verses, and that's 45 minutes sermon.
Let me tell you, I have, since I've been able to tape over that, I have wanted to work with somebody who would get into that. It's rich. Oh, you can do all sorts of things with that on this level. I mean, not your father, but this other fellow like Russell Woodard.
Woodard.
Yeah, people like that.
I think I'd rather go hear him by a long shot than I would Walt, just from neither here neither one of them. I don't see how Walt could do anything up there. Have you listened to him yet?
Well, it's ritual, you see, in his church.
Oh, he doesn't do much talking then.
Well, none of them do. Not in the Episcopal church.
Well, I went there one time, seems to me, and they gave a little bit of it. Pudgy preacher they had.
Yeah, a little bit of it, but you don't have a chant like you do.
Yeah. Lord, he didn't have any power whatsoever.
Yeah.
I mean, it was pallid. He couldn't do a thing.
You know, but it's shameful. It's shameful. It is shameful that I don't have a little staff out here where we could sort of divide up our time. You see, some go one way, some another.
Mm-hmm. Get into these segments.
Oh, yes.
You can't, that's right. It's hard to do it all and come out with any strong feel about it. because it's so much.
It's so
put
much.
Put your finger into it.
Now you take this little church up at Windsor.
The Townsend's little, Church?
No, that's Methodist. This is Baptist Church. Alvin's Church, we call it. The cookies used to go there. They've had two preachers, and both of them are just plain fella. One of them runs a battery shop there in town. The other one, I don't know what he does. He's a mason, maybe. One of them is a heavyset fella, and he's just as plain as he could be, but just as open and straightforward. You just didn't know the mold was still there. And there were such people. And preaching didn't bother him, didn't ruin him. And this other fellow, they fired him.
Oh! Good take that, huh?
It wasn't his fault, but you know, they get all tied up, these little churches. The man they got, he's a little spindly fella, and just a smile all over his face all the time. He couldn't say the Lord's Prayer without smiling. But he got a lyric gift, just plain lyric, and he don't know it, and they don't know it, and it's pure singing, almost the way he talks.
Now he can just take any word and put it out.
Oh yes,
doesn't make any difference what he's talking about.
He's not oratorical, but I mean he doesn't have any gift for language, but he has a feel for it. And, you see, I could work with these people, and they could cut through. You see, they'd quit looking for little earmarks or doctrine and all like that. See, most people can't get into it. They're too many traps for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I could work with them, and it would, I'm telling you, I don't know anything, it'd be richer. And then take on a few of the colored people, too. You see, some of those colored reverend from Micanopy, I've heard them. And you talk about it, the great big hand will just give you the word and make you feel like you're just eating off your mama's shelf. The way they talk is just restoring. They just got that in their voice. I've heard them over there. And all that's going to waste.
And there's old Dr. Evans, who would just be the worst thing I can imagine, but I think it'd be worth it. I can tell by the way he talks to me on the street.
Yeah.
Three words, how he is in the pulpit.
Yes, I've heard him in the pulpit.
But he maintains his position. He knows when to get out and how to placate everybody.
Yeah.
And how to become some obscure big person without doing anything.
Well, he got that doctor's degree, you see, from the education college over there. He don't know anything. But I tell you what, he handles texts pretty well.
Oh, he does?
Oh, yes, he does. He handles them pretty well. Now, there's no lift to it, and I don't want to hear him, but he does it. He does it well.
Hmm.
I think he excels at everything he does.
That's
true.
He
used to have that heavy equipment.
That's true.
And he used to go around digging ditches for people or holes in the ground for people. He can do that.
Oh, he's been an inventor in plastics?
He's a big watermelon grower at one time. Oh, he done a little of everything and excelled in it.
And jewelry. Made jewelry and stones.
Oh, really?
Stuff like that.
Yeah.
All that kind of business.
Well, now you see, the world is just full of people that you can who can report. Now, I've not talked to him, but I've. He used to take up with the little Methodist preachers that come over there. And he'd show them around and be the big daddy for them. And he was a great help to them. And, he was a power over there for a long time. He was.
Oh, he pulled that preacher bit just like, exactly like my old man would do. He came in, he asked me on the street, you know where there's a payphone in the shade? Awful hot. Got some phone calling to do. He says, well, you don't want to use my phone? Oh, would you? That'd be so nice. No, it's air conditioned. That's fine. So we sat down there and he started phone calling. And I knew he was doing some long distance phone calling. I never did catch where this collecting. And so he got up, and, oh, thank you for your phone and everything. And by the way, if there's any charges that come in, just let me know. And walked out.
That's why, you know, in that first meeting, or was it the second meeting, the question was, at the first meeting, they didn't have everybody there, and the question was, well, what they were doing, was it legal?
Now, wait a minute, the...
Mr. Morganson had said that they'd called a meeting, but it wasn't legal because they didn't do it right. It must have been the second meeting up there. That I went to.
That was a meeting on the 16th, I think, that was called for the road thing.
Yes. And now, Ward wasn't there.
Yes, that was it.
They tried to get him, but he wasn't there. He was sick or something.
There's something about, I think there's something in the charter about...
And some of those colored people back there, they'd get up, and they were worried about it. And I remember one of them got up, one little young... The latter got up and says, but all of this you're doing now, what I want to know, is it legal? Don't you remember?
Morganson was really working over some technicality about all members in a special meeting. This had something to do with a special meeting.
Yeah.
Or, no, it was, I think it probably really had to be a quorum, but he was talking about all five members trying to scuttle the ship, and I don't think he was right. But see, it had been much to his advantage if that meeting were canceled.
Yeah.
I don't know why. See, that's when they woke up. If they had never attended that meeting, they had gotten that road paved.
Yeah.
All they had to do was just not attend the damn meeting. The road was paved. Dumb fools came and attended anyhow and caught it. You know, got
they were right on the point of it.
Got hell. And then they learned, though. Then they quit coming.
Yeah.
But they didn't have power to work with either. So
yeah,
they could have at least had the road done, just shut up, because the thing couldn't function. Nobody could have done anything.
Yeah, it was too far gone then.
Right, they had the contract signed.
Yeah, it was all signed.
Well, was it?
Sure. Yeah. Officially signed.
Well, I didn't realize that.
Matter of fact, that's what that meeting was for, wasn't it?
The first meeting they had. It was called for to sign that contract. It was all set up. You know, they just passed it, signed it, and mailed it back to, what's his name, in the county road department.
Yeah, that's where we went.
Special meeting in May.
That meeting in May.
Yes, that was the second.
No, it could be June.
It was May.
It was in May.
It was the second week in May. See, we had second Monday in May, because we had the first meeting that was the first one we held, public meeting. And the following Monday, that was when they'd announced about the school meeting. It was going to be held upstairs. Everybody knew about that, and there was a big turnout for it, and nobody knew a word about the council meeting that's held downstairs.
Yeah.
And that's when Morganson was out welcoming everybody and glad they came to school meeting.
Yes, go on up to school.
Let's go right on up to school.
And had the council meeting at the same time?
Sure, right down. You know, the council meeting was held in the big room down.